This episode of Rise Up is brought to you by Minute with Mary. If you're looking to jazz up your look for the fall or the holiday season, I know it's crazy, right, that I'm saying the holiday season, but y'all, I think the holidays start with Halloween. And you know what's in my supermarkets? Halloween candy. So you know what it's time for? To jazz up your look. Check out the hashtag Minute with Mary.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. I'm just like my country, I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome back to Rise Up. It's a podcast dedicated to the smash Broadway hit Hamilton. So sit back, relax, and let's raise a glass to freedom.
We're gonna rise up, ain't time to take a shot. We're gonna rise up, ain't time to take a shot. We're gonna rise up.
Everybody and welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I cannot believe that you think that the holidays start with Halloween of all things.
Yeah, it's a holiday. A holiday.
Yeah.
And like from then on, you are decorating our houses. You're eating special treats. I mean, I'm not going crazy. Okay, I'm not saying Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day. I'm not saying that is the beginning of the holiday season. I'm not saying that Memorial Day or Labor Day is the start of the holiday season. No, I'm giving a little grace, okay? It's still summer.
Give everybody a little grace.
Let's go into fall. Mm-hmm. Fall begins. We've got the controversial Christopher Columbus Indigenous Peoples Day thing. We don't need to get into the middle of that skirmish, okay? And then we begin with Halloween. Everybody's happy on Halloween. Everybody. So let's begin the holiday season that way.
Fair. Let me rephrase it then. I can't believe they already have candy corn out, and it's only August as we're recording this. August, what, 19th?
Are people asking you yet at your Dunkin' shop if pumpkin spice is available?
Yes, they are, and we actually have it available.
Okay, I rest my point.
It's not being advertised, but it's a soft open. It's special off-menu stuff.
I think I literally was just like in
You were vindicated.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like in the law offices of Alexander Hamilton. You're welcome.
Well, after going to see Hamilton,
Rise Up.
Man, we are back, baby. We are back. We're having fun talking about Hamilton, and we just got a chance to go see it, like we said, in Providence, last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. And what an amazing show. Really, seriously. Truly, just gosh
so
darn it.
Gosh so darn
it.
Good.
Is it good? And
you're
once
like,
again,
I'm not going to cry yet. Oh, yep, I cried.
Yeah, once again, I cried six times at the very least. I cried at the same spots, cried at some spots that I didn't even anticipate again. An amazing show. Before we get into our show, though, where are you now? You've seen it three times.
I've seen it three times with three different Hamiltons.
Yes.
As the lead.
And where are you with the show? Are you still as enthused by it? Do you catch new things as you watch them as for the third time? What's
I, you know, it is. I catch. That's it. I firmly believe if you are listening and you're like, maybe I still haven't listened to the soundtrack, do yourself a favor, listen to it. Know it. Like literally listen to it multiple times and know it so that way you can enjoy it in addition to the costuming, the costume change, the set design, the choreography, the little personal inflections that people do to change their characters compared to the original cast recording. Like there's just so much to enjoy that I wish I could just watch it all on TV if it wasn't illegal to watch like pirated YouTube copies, just because I want to soak it in again and again. So yes, seeing it now three times, this last time I did notice even more differences. How about you? Like even more things, not differences, but even more things.
I agree with you that seeing it with another Hamilton, which would technically be my third because you have Lin-Manuel and then you have the first guy that I saw with and now this other guy.
Okay.
So technically you've heard or listened to four Hamiltons, my darling.
Yeah.
I would say you're right. It's fun to see the differences each person puts in the character. Mm. With Lin-Manuel, it felt swaggy. It felt
scrappy.
You know, it just felt
scrappy,
like
scrappy, swaggy.
It felt like the guy was smooth. You know, like he's just a cool character. With our first live performance, I felt like Hamilton almost had a form of like Asperger's, like where he was like really smart and uncomfortable around people, and like almost like Sherlock. Remember Sherlock, the Benedict Cumberbatch one?
Yes.
That was the feeling that I got from this one. Mm-hmm. The latest one, I got the sense that he was just super nerdy, which was really cool.
Yes.
Like I really appreciated that. And I know it's hard to, you know, understand that when you're not at the, when you're just a podcast listener, you're not at the performance. So it's hard to depict it, or at least to understand that. But just knowing that, like, there are differences, subtle differences. And the things I catch on are story things, mm-hmm. things that I see in perspective now. I see as they happen, and it livens the story up for me, which is one of the purposes of this particular episode, which is about the story of tonight, the story of Hamilton itself. And before we get into all of that, I wanted to remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast. You can go on patreon.com. and check us out there, or you can find it at maryandblake.com. And also, check us out on social media. Just look up Mary and Blake, whether it is Facebook, Twitter, or...
Why doesn't that have like a little code name?
What's that?
I don't know. Like, you know how people like shorten things and just give them little... I'll call it the Meads.
Well, we just got a new account on the Gram.
Hey!
Do it for the Gram, baby. Mary and Blake are now on Instagram. You can follow us there, and we do a lot of our behind the scenes stuff on Instagram, so it's a good follow. You'll get to see us doing all of the fun stuff while we're there. And you know, maybe we will do that when we're in today's show, just so everybody gets a chance to get the inside scoop on that. And where you go to maryandblake.com and check out all of the podcasts and blogs, including Outlander Cast and Minute with Mary, the podcast. We've got This Is Us 2, which is coming back soon, actually premiering on September 24th.
Oh.
I just learned is premiering on September 24th. And we have the Game of Thrones podcast that we did. We've done Gilmore Girls. We've got 40 billion podcasts. Mm-hmm. And we may or may not be having a Watchmen podcast this season as well, which I'm very excited about. So that is that. Check us out, maryandblake.com. We find all of our podcasts and blogs, including the Handmaid's Diaries, which I am writing, which I'm very excited about. As for that, now, Marvin, are you ready to get into today's show?
You bet.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you could have been anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here with us in New York City. Are you ready for a cabinet meeting, huh? The issue on the table.
Well, today, of course, we are talking about the story of Hamilton. Where does it go? Where does it go wrong? Where does it rank among the other stories you've watched? And another fun question: would it even make a fun movie?
That's right,
because that's like the hot thing in Broadway now.
I totally agree. So let's get this out of the way right now, Mary. In terms of Hamilton itself and the story of Hamilton, where does this story rank for you? Is it among the best stories you've ever watched? Is it kind of...
Are we talking like stories portrayed on the stage? I think that that's like a
question. No, I just think story in general. Like, not just stage. It's not limited to just stage. I think it's everything.
Okay.
I think it's... Whether it's Game of Thrones. Is it Gilmore Girls? Is it Star Wars? Is it better than Marvel? Like, where are you in terms of, I really love this story. It is written very well. I appreciate this is where all this is coming from. Where are you? Where do you think this ranks for you?
The story, otherwise known as Hamilton the Musical, I think that this is a very well thought out story. I think that, in my opinion, I think that it's exciting, that it is something that you can reread, re-see, re-listen to, and feel different things for different characters, that you may at first listen to it and be like, oh, Alexander Hamilton, he's my boy. Like, that's who I'm cheering for. And then before you know it, you're listening to the score again. You're like, gosh, why do I love Burr so much? What just happened to me? And I love that when you can like relive a story over and over again.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I for me, I'm thinking that this story is probably the story of Hamilton itself. I would rank it up in the top 10 for me. It is an extraordinarily well-written story. And I know I keep using that word, but I think it's paced properly. I think the characters are well-written. I think the motivations are well-written. It's all organic. It's not determined by plot. And I feel like there is a natural thread for everybody and every instance of what the show is trying to tell you.
Yep.
So because of that, I think I really appreciate.
Look at you. He's trying to gram right now, guys. He's trying to do an Instagram story.
I did. I grammed it.
While we were doing it, and he didn't know to mute it.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm still new with the gram, okay? I'm still new with the gram.
You are.
So because of that, I really appreciate this story. I just think it's well written. It's everything about it is just right, and we'll get into why. So, Mary, where do you think the show gets it right? Or where do you think the story overall of Hamilton gets it right in terms of how it's written and the way that it's presented to you as the viewer?
Where do I think it goes right?
Yes.
Well, I feel like it introduces you to the characters in a fun way.
Okay, and what do you mean?
Well, it's in a musical!
No, but the musical stuff aside, we're just talking about story. We're just talking about if this was a television show, right? Musical stuff aside, what about this introduces you in a fun way?
Well, just the language, the fact that these other characters are introducing you, that frequently those bits that you learn about the person in the beginning are then interwoven throughout the show. You know what I mean? So it's not just like, hi, trust me that this guy does this, but like you see it repeatedly come throughout the show.
Yeah, you know, that's actually really great because in the beginning of the show, they have all of the characters and they tell you straight up, this is what happened. I died for him. I loved him.
Yep.
I fought with him. And I'm the damn fool that shot him.
Yeah.
Like, you know straight up what's happening. You have that dramatic irony of knowing what is going to happen.
Yeah.
I trusted him. And they tell you straight up. And you get a chance to either parse it together for yourself or you get a chance to just watch it envelop. Develop rather.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that's an interesting technique to use to just tell you straight up, this is what we're doing.
Yes.
And given the way that it's written and given how fast, well, I mean, again, we're not talking about the show, we're talking about the story. Given how fast the story moves, I mean, it is, boom, the pace is, it never stops. It never slows. And you kind of need that idea of, I'm the damn fool who shot him. So you know that this guy is going to be a problem.
I mean, many people forget. They hear that first line, you know, the first song, and then they forget. And they're like, oh my God. Like, if they don't know the story of Hamilton and Burr.
Right.
It's a little feisty at the end.
And you know, not a lot of people do know the story of Hamilton
and Burr. That's what I'm talking about, man.
You know, not a lot of people know that it was Burr who shot him and Burr who killed him. So when
when it starts off, it's not like it's Alexander Hamilton. The song is Alexander Hamilton. Burr doesn't stay up, and I am Burr. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't say, like, remember me. It's just random people who throughout the show are not only their characters, but they're the ensemble. They act, you know what I mean? They're like up on the rafters. So it's easy to forget. You know, I loved him. Like, it's easy to forget these different people, but they do lay it down, and then it's reaffirmed throughout the show. Mm-hmm. I also just loved how, as I said earlier, you get to see the story of Alexander through many people's perspectives. It is not just through Alexander Hamilton's perspective because of the way the show is. For example, one of my favorite series, Harry Potter, it's through Harry Potter's eyes. Like, for the most part, until you get to the later books, like, it's what Harry Potter sees, what he does, you know, his thoughts, his impressions, his beliefs. You know, he thinks that Severus Snape is bad for literally, like, almost all of his teenage years. We, as the audience, then think that he is bad because we're only seeing things from his perspective. And yet the story of Hamilton does it in such a way that Alexander is upfront about things that he is proud of, upfront about things that he is amazing at. You know, like, I'm wicked smart and I'm like, I'm really scrappy, like, I'm ready to work. But he also is the person who talks about his own faults. You know, like he talks about things that he's done wrong. He sings about it, but then other people are involved as well. It's such a difference than reading a book story in the sense. It reminds me a bit about like Game of Thrones. You know, Game of Thrones, different chapters are written by different characters, so sure. You get to see things from their perspective. You can think that Jaime Lannister's a jerk, but then you can read it from someone else's perspective and be like, you know, maybe he wasn't so bad.
Right.
And that's what I think Hamilton the musical does as well, is that if we had just seen Hamilton just from Burr's perspective, we would not be like, way to go, man.
Right.
we're rooting for you. And that's what I said. Like, that's one of the things that I've struggled with as I've listened to it over and over, is it is fun to see things through Eliza's perspective the entire show, through yep. Burr's perspective the entire show.
But the way that it's written, it is coming from Burr.
Correct.
Which I think is the show's greatest triumph. It's telling
it's
you a story.
Burr and Hamilton, but Burr is the main narrator.
Yes, it's telling you a story of Hamilton through the lens of Aaron Burr. And that is a really good thing to do. And the reason why that is so good is because it doesn't make Alexander Hamilton a demigod. It doesn't like glorify Alexander. I mean, it does to a certain extent because it's obviously the play about Hamilton, but it's having Burr be the narrator is a great perspective because it allows you to see the faults of Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yes, he's singing about it, but it also gives you something else. It gives you something, a little bit of pause, and it allows you to choose. You can choose. For me, I've said it before, I'll say it again. My favorite character is absolutely Aaron Burr. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But aside from Hamilton, and even I would even make an argument, and I think we will make an argument in another episode of this podcast, that the show does a better job describing Burr than it does Hamilton.
I would disagree, but okay.
No, but that's the beautiful part about yes. having this perspective. That perspective allows us to have that debate. And that's why the story is so effective, right?
Yes.
Because you take certain things out of it from Hamilton's side, and I take certain things out of it from Burr's side.
Yep.
Which is why telling it from Burr's perspective is an absolute triumph. And because of that, we have this... It follows a relatively normal structure of any particular story, right? It shows the intro, it shows the rising good, it shows a climax of certain sorts. Like we have the rising good and everything that Hamilton does to become Washington's right-hand man. That's
yes.
a rising star. We get to the war, the people win the war. And then we get to the climax of Hamilton changing the fabric of the government. We're going to create a national bank. We are going to be the Secretary of the Treasury. We are going to stay out of war. I have Washington's ear. At that point, that's the climax. And then after that, when Hamilton is at his highest, we begin our descent down. Because every good story is, for the most part, written in three acts. You can do some four act, you can do some five act, I mean, you could even do two act, because technically this story of Hamilton is written in two acts. But if you look at the events, you can pretty much delineate three acts. And then halfway through the second act, after the climax, we get the descent. Mariah Reynolds, him falling apart, his son dying. Finally, at that point, we have our bottom out. Philip Hamilton dies. He, Alexander, becomes a disaster.
So sad.
And it leads him to do things he wouldn't otherwise normally do.
Yep.
And because of that, we then get to the duel, which is the bottom out, and then we finally have a rise back up again at the end. So you see how that natural flow, the up, the climax, the descent, the bottom out, and then finally back up to normal again with where we are.
Yep.
It's a normal flow of a story, which brings me back a little bit to Burr.
Yes.
I love Burr.
The man we love to hate and love.
Right, because, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, because you do love to hate him. He does have this perspective of, he's making real choices.
You know what? See, I think He makes real choices, and I think I'm just speaking from personal. You know what? I won't speak for everybody because maybe all of you have got your acts together. But Burr reminds me of me in middle school and like early high school, where it's like I tried to do everything right.
Right.
I wanted to be in the room where it freaking happened. Okay. I wanted a boyfriend. I'm sorry I was 5'11 at the age of 11 and everybody came up to my nips. Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry. That didn't work. But like, I wasn't friends with the popular people.
Not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob. I learned that all the boys would just at the slow dance would be like, I just got to go hike through the mountain, the Rockies. That's what they called my boobs, the Rockies. When I would slow dance with them, I just got to hike through the Rockies, meaning me. Jerks. Anyway, but like I wanted to be, so I like did all the committees. I went to the things. I would try to invite the girls over for play dates because still at that age we couldn't even drive and they wouldn't want to do the play dates with me. And I did everything and I was smart and I was involved and I like killed me when I wouldn't be able to do these same things. And it was like, it was jealousy. It was wanting to be where these people were, the movers and shakers of middle school were. And when I see Burr, I know that feeling. I know that feeling of being left out, of that nobody gets me, of like, you know, sacrificing yourself to try to get ahead in a social way. Luckily, I figured out just to be myself and that I'd be much happier. And I'm sorry that it took Burr a long time. But I feel like, as I said, I'll speak from my experience, but I feel like probably everyone's had that sometime in their life, whether it was in your youth, whether it was in college, whether it's now as an adult, that we've all felt that way where it's like, man, I wish I could be like, I've struggled with mom groups. I've told you about it tons of times, Blake. Like, I've struggled finding mom friends, and I'm like, oh, maybe these moms don't like me because I say things like nips. I don't know. Like, I'm trying, but I don't want to not be myself. But you just put yourself out there, and it's like society has always had groups, has had cliques, has had elites, you know? And I feel like we've all, in different areas of our life, whether it's through our career, whether through our social circles or what have you, we've all wanted to be in the room where it happens. And so through that, Burr is so human to us. And we've all known a freaking Alexander Hamilton, okay? We've all known that girl that comes in eighth grade.
And just gets everything
right. Who's like literally like most popular right away. It's like, What's that redhead movie that was like a pop culture movie and she was weird, but then she became popular on
Mean
Wednesdays
Girls?
We Pink? Yes.
Yeah, okay? Mean Girls, yes.
Mean Girls. It's like Mean
Lindsay
Girls.
Lindsay Lohan.
It's like Lindsay Lohan comes to your class.
That was prime Lindsay Lohan.
And that would happen to me. I'd be like, whoa, a new kid. Maybe they're going to be my friend. Hey, Lindsay Lohan, you want to be my friend and be nerdy? Yeah, totally. Not. Mean Girls was my life. And Mean Girls was Aaron Burr's life.
Yeah, I would say that's an apropos.
Aaron Burr was the nerdy friend in Mean Girls.
Yes, absolutely.
The like science camp friend.
Right. And at least the way
what was that other one? The Drew Barrymore one. Never Been Kissed or
Never
something?
Never Been Kissed, yes.
Crap, they're all the same thing. See, guys? It's happened to everybody.
I'm thinking we're witnessing a pattern here. You know, and not to make this, you know, a Burr and Hamilton, you know, episode, because I really don't want to do that. I want to do that for another episode.
Because that is what the play is about.
I know. But that's great. And that's... And it's so good that the show gets that relationship so right. Mm-hmm. And they get it right in, I think, a couple of different ways. First, we talked about Burr and wanting to be in the room where it happens. And it's such a great relationship between the two, between Hamilton and Burr, because Burr is literally, with the way that it's written within this story, is literally the opposite of Hamilton in every way.
I mean, aside from being orphans and deciding to go study law and having big ambitions.
Yeah, but the ambitions are completely, they're the same, but they're for different reasons. Burr wants to be in the room where it happens for the sake of being in the room where it happens. His ambition isn't to build a legacy like Hamilton's. Hamilton wants to build something that's going to outlive him. Mm-hmm. Burr is saying, I want to be in the room where it happens. He doesn't give any reason. He doesn't say, I have this purpose. It's just, I want to be there for the sake of, it's the sake for the thing of the thingness. I want this.
Okay, you're getting wicked deep, man. I need coffee.
Not enough coffee in the world for the how deep that is.
Nope.
And also, Burr comes from wealth. He comes from high education.
He's a trust fund, baby. You can trust me.
Exactly. He is the opposite of Hamilton. And Hamilton even says, Burr, you're a better lawyer than me. You're succinct. You defend well. I am loud-mouthed. I'm wordy. I shoot off at the mouth. I don't have any friends. Everybody loves you, Burr. They are the opposite. And because of that, they push each other to do things that they wouldn't otherwise normally do throughout the play. They both push each other to make decisions that effectively alter the plot, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, Hamilton goes off and he says, I am going to do less talking. I'm going to go out and make a deal. And that's how he gets the National Bank. Burr says, I'm going after what I want, and I'm doing it, and I'm going out into the world, and I'm going to be president because I learned that from you, Hamilton. And that whole thing, how that happened, they both collided because of those two changes to their character, which were developed by that relationship. Having said all that, and this is what I really want to get your opinion about, Mary.
I'm ready.
Which is, where the show really gets it right is they're allowing each of the antagonists, which would be the war, Jefferson, even the king, and Mariah Reynolds, they all funnel into the main bad guy at the end. Well, the main antagonist, which would be Burr.
Being back.
All of these things in some way are related to Burr, and they all
funnel. How is Reynolds?
Because Burr is the one who comes up with the idea of like extorting Hamilton. He's the one saying, get in the money, find out where the problem is.
I love that turn.
Right.
That song.
I know. And he is the one who is politically motivated to do it because he's saying, we're going to show him who the Democratic motherfucking Southern Democratic Republicans are, you know, like that whole thing. He's the one who's behind that. Jefferson funnels into Burr because they finally have to have that conflict of who's going to be president. And Hamilton has to choose between Burr and Jefferson. Madison is the one who proposes the deal to get the Capitol in D.C. And they're at the dinner and Burr sings, I want to be in the room where it happens. All of these things, even the war, when they're coming in and Washington says, Burr goes to Washington saying, I have some ideas. I really appreciate your plans and what you're doing, but I have some thoughts of my own. And Washington says, yes. And as soon as Hamilton walks in, it's close the door on your way out, Burr. It's even the king going around saying, never going to be president now. And
I'm going to be president now. I love this show.
It's a fantastic story because all of the subcategories, all of the sub-antagonists filter down into Burr. It all builds to that final conflict. Would you agree with this statement?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. That being said, this is not the episode about Burr versus Hamilton. This is the overall story of what we're trying to talk about. And I think the show goes really well because they begin the show with Hamilton saying, I'm not going to throw away my shot. Mm-hmm. And the story itself ends with Hamilton throwing away his shot, literally and figuratively.
Well, the story doesn't actually end there. It ends with Eliza.
Well, Hamilton's story ends there.
Yes.
And that is a really excellent character arc. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah.
Do you find that is the real arc for Hamilton?
That's a good question.
Because it's his own worst fate at the end, right?
I mean, what is his arc? I think, you know, it's this youth, this power, this determination, this making something that will last forever. But then you got Eliza telling him the gosh darn truth.
What do you mean?
Hey, man, you're being a little busy and crazy. What really matters is the people that you love. So don't be too crazy. You can be a little crazy. You can be changing the world. Can be making some moves.
Yeah.
But don't forget about us.
But what does he do?
Forgets about his family.
Yes, he forgets about his family.
And then that's the beginning of the end.
that's true.
Cheaters never prosper, okay?
No, they don't.
This, like, as you said, that's when the beginning of the end happens. He has his affair, his son. Like, it's just like, oh, man. Not good.
Right.
Not great.
Not great, Bob.
No.
So, and that's the thing. I think the
such
arc,
tragedy.
The arc is one of tragedy. It is one of
keep your penis in your pants.
Well, immense power and talent cannot save you if you can't save yourself. Right, and that is the beauty of what Washington and Hamilton are trying to do together. Washington is out there trying to run the country, and he's saying winning was easy, governing is harder. Living is easy. I'm sorry. Dying is easy. Living is harder.
You keep banging stuff, Blake.
I know. I'm banging.
I understand.
Sorry.
I'm
just very passionate.
I know, man.
And history has its eyes on you. And Hamilton doesn't learn anything from this.
No.
He doesn't learn any of it. And that is why.
Because he doesn't believe that history is going to have his eyes on him. He doesn't think he's of that level yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he acts like history doesn't have his eyes. And you know what? It wouldn't have if it wasn't for Eliza.
I think that's relatively true.
Who run the world?
Girls. But there's record of Hamilton. So, and
thanks to, you know, mostly Eliza.
And he is the first Secretary of the Treasury. So, I mean.
No, I know. I know he would have been there. Just like, though, Paul Revere's, like, friend.
Oh, yes, that guy.
You know that guy that doesn't actually get mentioned, but who was like integral to the British are coming?
Yes.
That would have been Alexander Hamilton if it wasn't for Eliza.
It's possible that Alexander Hamilton is John Jay in real life. Like, you know he's there. He was the first, Supreme Court. Like, he's the first Chief Justice. But, like, that's all you know about him? Like, you maybe probably wouldn't know a lot or enough about him without Eliza. I would probably give you that. And with that in mind, I think that's also something that the story really gets right, because Hamilton is the one who causes his own misery. Mm. He's the one who creates his own triumphs and causes his own problems.
Yep.
And those problems keep pushing the plot forward. And those problems are found in Hamilton's character.
Yes.
Right, they are found by his boundless ambition. They are found in
that
his,
blinds him.
That blinds him. They are found in how he shoots off at the mouth, how he doesn't use his brain before he speaks sometimes, and the world crumbling around him is as a result of his character traits. There's nothing in the story that happens just because the story needs it to happen. I think you can make a case for the Mariah Reynolds issue, where like he cheats on Eliza.
It's just kind of a big deal.
Like it, but
it's
like
the beginning of the end.
It just happens. It happens out of nowhere. It doesn't. But then again, it's a character trait of his. He's reliable with the ladies. He was the feral tomcat was named after him, and if the tomcat can get married, there's hope for our ass after all, the whole thing. So it does set that up, but all of a sudden Mariah Reynolds shows up and he's cheating on his wife. It does kind of just happen. But then again, you're talking about someone who's extremely tired, has been down on his luck.
I mean, he's just kind of...
He's working hard.
I just think he thinks that he's invincible and kind of arrogant about that.
And that's the whole point.
But I didn't feel that way when I first listened to it.
The character himself is the one that's guiding these actions. The actions are not guiding the character. And that is where the show really gets it right.
Agree.
You would agree with that? You know, another thing I think it gets really good is Hamilton's final moment. Having him and alluding to death throughout the entire show. And how they even tell you duels are stupid and juvenile. And Burr saying, oh yeah, you know, and the Mercer legacy is secure. All he had to do was die. And
how to give it a try.
Yeah. And they laugh about it. And here they are at the end. The final irony is that that Hamilton dies in something that he's already talked about as being stupid. It's that final moment of, look at this.
Stop banging the table. I know you're passionate.
Sorry. So, where else do you think that the show gets it right? Where else do you think the show works for you in that, or the story works for you in that? It really succeeds. It makes it a living, breathing.
Okay, so why would I love this show? Why am I like able to see this show three times and listen to it a million times,
right?
And not be like, okay, that was enough? Because it is tragic. It is a tragedy. Like, someone's dead. Someone that you've learned to love over that period of time, that has excited you, that you've been on this journey with, that you've known, loved, and trusted, or gotten to know at least. Maybe you didn't trust him, but he's dead. There's not a wedding. There's not a baby. This is a tragedy.
Yep.
And yet they're able to end it on such a high note, like, and give you hope. And I really, really love that about this story. You know, I'm not going to lie. Blake and I right now have been binging The Handmaid's Tale. I'm feeling really Debbie Down. Okay, guys, really Debbie Down. And it's so wonderful that with this story, I mean, The Handmaid's Tale isn't done, so it's not a fair comparison. I'm enjoying it. But frequently when you do see tragedies, whether it's on stage or you read about it and you close it and that character is dead, you don't necessarily have a smile on your face.
Sure.
I did for The Notebook when they died together in each other's arms. Spoiler alert. That was great. This was kind of like The Notebook for me, but on a much more educated level.
Yes, I will grant that to you.
All right, it's real.
Now, where does the story go wrong for you? Like, what are the things that you think, I wish that could have been done better, or maybe not in it at all?
Okay, the story, not the play?
Yeah, the story. Where does the story go wrong for you? Like, do you want me to say my first one?
Sure.
I think my first one is that Angelica goes wrong. I'm not in love with the character of Angelica.
Why?
And I'm not in love with her because nothing ever comes out of her relationship with Hamilton.
You mean like the sexual tension aspect of Angelica?
Yeah, but just Angelica overall. Like, she's there for Eliza. That's great. But I don't know.
You need a female narrator. And I think you need someone who's not Eliza to be that female narrator.
Yeah, she is an audience surrogate, I think, for the most part.
She's like a George Washington, like, still in the things, but is able to elaborate on other things a little bit more.
Yeah, but when it comes down to it, her relationship, whether it's the sisterly or, you know, the what's alluded to as a sexual relationship. Well, not sexual, but just a more than...
Well, and then does that play that role, though? Because he does end up cheating on Eliza. So we're able to see, okay, we hear from everybody. Once again, character traits are interwoven throughout this story. So we're told, you know, he was good with the ladies. You know, Martha Washington named her Pharaoh Tomcat after him. Like, and then he has this, like, thing going on with Angelica. But she's the oldest in the story and can't be with him. But they still have this back and forth. So we're supposed to have this reoccurring theme that Alexander Hamilton is a flirt. And you can't take the flirt out of a flirt.
I
know someone in my life. Not you, Blake. Don't worry.
Yes, no, not me.
But
definitely
I know someone
not
in my life who is a lifelong flirt. And let me tell you, folks, It's messed up his life. It's messed up his life. And I'm wondering if he can't shake the flirt. You know, some people, oh, and I know someone else too.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Can't shake the flirt, okay? There are a couple of, and they're all guys, okay?
Nah, there were women who were flirts too.
I don't know. I don't know of anyone off the top of my head right now, but I'm telling you that this, I take the Angelica part to show that Alexander Hamilton was one of these lifelong flirts.
Right, but my argument, my counter argument to that would be it didn't affect the plot in any meaningful way. And we spend a lot of time with Angelica, and she sings. And that's another thing that I'm about to bring up, too, here, which is the song Satisfied. Maybe it enlightens Hamilton a little bit. Like, it gives you some kind of perspective on the type of guy he is, that he is never going to be satisfied. No, if he, even if he does get married, even if he does have kids, even if he does create the National Bank, even if he wins a war, becomes a general, becomes a lawyer, defends the guy in the first national murder case, he's never, ever, 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 ever going to be satisfied. Nope. But then again, what are we doing having this whole moment of rewinding and doing the wedding all over again and replaying the whole interaction between Angelica and Eliza?
Which is really cool on stage.
It's really cool on stage, but in terms of the story itself, is it necessary? Do you find that this portion of the story is necessary?
No.
No?
Like, if it was removed, would the end of the play be different?
Right, so we're gonna call this the Jamie versus what the heck was the guy's name?
Euron.
The Jamie versus Euron debate.
Euron Greyjoy. For those of you who don't know, Game of Thrones, towards the end, there's this really big battle that you don't need.
You just don't need. And if you take it out, nothing changes.
Yeah.
And this is the Jamie Euron debate.
Wow.
So if you take out Satisfied and you take out the whole thing with Eliza, there is any of the story changed? And I think that it's not changed.
You like how your brain is like stalling? I know.
Sorry, is my brain is working too fast?
Yeah, we need coffee.
I know. I think the story stays the same.
You're banging again.
I know. I'm trying not to bang.
I need to get you a pillow.
Another thing related to Angelica.
You're hating on Angelica. Oh my gosh.
It's related to Angelica.
She's such a good voice.
She is such a good voice.
Work.
It's not Angelica. It's Eliza. Eliza, throughout most of the story, is treated as kind of like a nagging wife.
Really?
Yeah.
I do not see it as that.
Okay, well,
I see her as the voice of reason.
Well, you can make...
How interesting, though, from a husband-wife perspective. And I'm not saying this is anything bad.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting that you saw her as a nagging wife, and I saw her once again as the voice of reason, being like, because a lot of the things she says to him,
they're true.
I say to you.
All the time. I totally agree.
Look around at how lucky we are to be alive right now. Like, that's the mantra of the Larson household.
Yes.
When Mama's in charge.
I would absolutely agree. But it's, she's taking away from Alexander's drive. She's telling him, slow down, stop.
She's telling him to reprioritize.
And for me, it shows up no greater than in Nonstop, when he's saying, when Washington comes up to him and says, hey, I need you to be the Secretary of the Treasury. And he says, okay, I'm going to do it. And
she says, Alexander.
And he says, well, I have to lead. History has its eyes on me. Like, I'm going to do this.
She's probably in flipping labor. And he like was driving her on the horse and he just leaves her on the side. Alexander. Alexander.
What are you doing? So that's why I say that
nagging
she's...
wife. She's flipping pregnant. And it wasn't even her first trimester. She's known for a month or two. Oh, nope.
She's like, honey. That's why I'm saying that there's not much to the Eliza character other than her busting his balls a little bit, being like...
Completely disagree, but okay. I think I fleshed that out.
Well, no. Aside from her trying to be the voice of reason, what else is there about Eliza?
I mean, hello, the whole ending.
Well, you didn't let me finish about that portion.
You just asked me.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right. However, I will say this. She is given agency. She is given something.
Listen, man, a lot of us are late bloomers, and history does not have its eyes on women, because we all know that a lot of the founding fathers, a lot of men in history, they're going home laying in bed. Honey, I've had a rough day. Oh, really? Well, let's talk about this. And then who comes up with the game plan? Once again, have you watched The Handmaid's Tale?
The women. I totally agree. And what I'm getting at is she is eventually given agency. She does make the choice to cut Alexander out of her life. She makes that choice. She does it. She hopes he burns. And those are strong fighting words. I hope you burn. Like, can you imagine that?
I mean,
and then,
yes.
And then,
not against you.
And then she chooses to allow him back in. And she chooses to keep his legacy alive. The thing that tore them apart, she chooses to keep alive, which is an excellent character trait. But I would say for the for the first half of the play, she isn't given much.
But like, that's because Angelica has it. Angelica has the forefront of the female character, makes it interesting, has the big ballads. You know, Byrne isn't until later. So it's not, because he could have easily just like expanded upon Eliza and had her sing a little bit more. Sure. And
that's why I'm saying I wonder if the story gets it wrong there, because why are we investing in Angelica when we should be spending more time with Eliza?
Because she's a late bloomer.
Okay. All right. All right. Another kind of nothing character is James Madison.
Yes.
James Madison is a nothing character.
But he needs to be there.
He does need to be there. He just shows up. He, you know, he does give the idea of having the deal for the Capitol and the National Bank. He does do something that affects
the plot. Well, because in history, he was always there. So that's the thing, is they couldn't like write this story without including him.
Well, I disagree in that, you know, just because it happened in real life does not serve as an excuse for your story. You can change things as necessary. You can write people in and out of your story as you want.
But yeah, like even though he was kind of a nobody in this story, he was still a major player in the Founding Fathers. He was in the room where it happened. Okay, you couldn't be like, these people in the room where it happened, and then people go and take their history test, and they'd be like, just kidding, there was one more guy.
That's a valid point.
Like, I think that alone needed to happen. Like, maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda was sitting there being like, do we need to have Madison? He's kind of like a bump on a log. And then he's like, shoot. We make such a big deal out of the room where it happened.
We got to have him.
God, what do we do? Guess we'll keep him.
I think I would probably agree with you. Another thing that I kind of want to talk about here is the Mariah Reynolds fiasco.
Ugh, that floozy.
Yeah, that wench.
Imagine being one of her descendants.
Oh my God, right? You just all of a sudden, you're like, that's my great grandma.
Yeah.
Not proud of that one.
Yep.
Is this something that you can't remove it from the show, because obviously it changes a whole ton. So it's
kind of a big deal.
Is it? Do you like the way that it was handled? Do you like the way that the show handles the whole interaction and how it seems to develop? Is it character motivated? Is it a vital part of the show that you think they did really well?
I mean, we're talking about things that you don't think the story did well, and I think they did this well. I think from the beginning we are hit over the head that Alexander Hamilton is a flirt.
Yep.
Will always be a flirt. Mm-hmm. Will never be satisfied.
Sure.
So I think that this is like a huge thing. Like, you're not supposed to be told something in a story if it's pointless, right? That's kind of what we're talking about. It would have been pointless to repeatedly say he was a flirt, that he was good with the ladies, that he possibly even was flirting all the time with his sister-in-law, if something didn't come of it. So I do think that it's important. You know, Mariah Reynolds, her husband, whatever. They're nobodies. They're Madison's as well, but it had to happen. And then this is the apex. Like, this is the fall. This is what starts the train of events for the entire rest of Alexander Hamilton's story.
Sure.
So I liked how it was brought about. I think that it was in character.
One last thing, I actually think that the show really did well, as a matter of fact, because now that we're talking about it, Mariah Reynolds, and I remember laughing when the king came out, you're never going to be president now, and the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think the show does really well in the form of the king. I think having him as the audience surrogate, being somebody who is completely separate from all of these events, just looking at it from afar, I think that is a truly awesome thing. Like, it's a truly awesome character bit for the king, because it allows you to connect both halves of the show. It allows you to connect the war to the politics of Hamilton and how that is looked at from afar.
Yeah.
Of course, it helps. It's funny, but it's also it's not treated seriously.
Well,
the king is an antagonist.
He's not
like the type of antagonist you would think that he would be. He's a cartoon.
But nothing about the king in the entire story is serious, and that's huge. what I mean? So I agree with you. It's like they're able to take this very serious thing, this thing that breaks your heart, breaks Eliza's heart, and then put a different spin on it so that you can laugh a little bit. They needed to add that brevity.
Absolutely.
Because from then on out, hold on to your butts.
I totally agree. So I have some lasting questions here that I want to ask
you. Okay.
Is Hamilton redeemed by the end of the show, do you think? Do you think his character is one that is solved? It is one that...
I feel better about him in, like... when they hold hands quiet uptown.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's when I'm like, okay.
When
she holds his hand, I'm like, I'll hold your hand too.
Oh, my God. But then again...
Is that what you're asking?
Yes, but then again, we have a problem where he puts Burr ahead of his wife. He puts Burr ahead of his family.
Yeah.
And he goes and does the stupid thing and gets himself killed. Is that taking away from Hamilton, and does Eliza's reaction and her actions to him and trying to save his legacy, does that redeem Hamilton in your eyes, regardless of however or whatever he did to put Burr ahead of his family?
I don't really know.
Right. That's a question. I'm not saying you have to have the answer. It's a question that we have to explore.
Yeah.
Is it something that is good? You know, when Eliza reaches out and touches and says, you know, is that her?
People don't know about that.
Well, that's true. A valid point.
That's a visual.
Good point. Are Eliza's actions, is Hamilton, let's put it this way, is Hamilton worthy of Eliza's actions after he dies? That's a better question.
That is a better question.
Yes. What do you think? At least the way that the story is written, not the history, but the story. Is the story Hamilton worth?
Yes.
Why?
Because he was such a important figure in U.S. history and created so much.
The next question, does he deserve the death that he receives?
Yes.
You think he needs to be punished for all of his actions?
No, I think you're an idiot. Don't duel.
Valid point. Oh, because, you know...
Hey, it could go one of two ways.
You live or you die. You get a 50-50 shot. Hey,
you know what I'm not going to be doing any time in my life?
Dueling.
Because it's stupid.
Is Hamilton's... You know, Burr has this great line, I should have known that the world was wide enough for both Hamilton and me. Is the show more of an indictment on Hamilton, or is the show more of an indictment on Burr?
Oh, it's Burr, because it's Burr saying, it's okay, middle school Mary. This is like the more you know, like, be yourself. Be yourself, man.
Yep.
It's going to be okay. Actually, being yourself is better than okay. It is the best. So, yeah.
Is Burr a redeemable character within the show?
Oh, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Those are my lasting questions, really. And I would like you guys to pipe in and have any lasting questions that you have from Hamilton the show and Hamilton the story as it is written in the show. The final question I have for you, Mary, would this make a good television miniseries, or would it make a good movie? Which one do you think would be better?
Oh, I have to choose. I'd say yes to either. I don't necessarily know if, like, singing would be best on screen. Like, I would love to see this now that I enjoy the historical aspect of it. I would like to see this just, like, kind of in the same vein as the Tudors. You know, I could do Tudors, but Hamilton.
Yeah, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is the miniseries by HBO about John Adams. It's just simply called John Adams.
Yeah.
Which Hamilton is actually featured in, by the way. I think I'd be interested in seeing a miniseries about Hamilton.
Because sometimes when I watch musicals in a movie, just not the same. Like, sometimes it's great, but I don't know.
It feels disingenuous a little bit.
And the TV thing, guys, I am all for musicals, but like this whole like Thanksgiving night, or what night is it when they've been doing musicals on like NBC?
I don't know.
It's all live to tape.
But yes, you're right.
And
I agree.
Carrie Underwood, wasn't it like The Sound of Music?
Yes, it was The Sound of Music.
So like that kind of a thing, definitely don't want that for Hamilton.
Right.
No, thank you.
I would agree. I don't think. No.
No.
How about a movie? Like, could we give Hamilton the Les Mis treatment? Could we give Hamilton the Phantom of the Opera treatment?
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, why do you say yes? Let's put it that way. Why do you say yes?
Well, because then you'd have the whole scope. The thing with like the TV cheapy thing is it's stupid. Like, it's different when you're on stage and you're there, you're like in it. These people are doing it live. You're like, yes, you are there in your mind mentally.
Yes.
TV, if it's not done very well,
it's cheap.
It's cheap.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, you're educated enough as a viewer to know that it's cheap.
Yeah. If we're talking HBO level, I'm in.
Yes.
If we're talking Les Mis movie level, I mean, I want the sounds, I want the costumes, I want the grandeur of it, I'm in. But if you're going to be doing a little rinky-dinky, no way, Jose.
Would you prefer the musical on a TV miniseries as opposed to like just a straight story? Like,
I would prefer the story.
I think I would agree. In a movie, would you prefer a musical movie or a straight story?
Musical movie.
I think you're probably right on that one, too.
Oh, my God. Is this why we're married? Are we kind of like best? Do we just become best friends?
Yep. Yeah, I think I would like to see a musical movie. The problem is that the show, the live show, is 2 hours, 45 minutes.
How long was the Les Mis movie?
It was probably 2.5. Right around there. Yeah. So you got to cut some stuff out.
Yeah.
The musical movie would be great.
Listen, they can do this. I mean, I don't need it anytime soon, though.
No. Let the play be the play. Let the musical be the musical. Let it shine. Let it do its own thing. But like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see a movie. There's almost too much money to be made to not make it a movie.
I don't know. Like, the problem is that if they don't make it a movie, there's going to be a ginormous population that will not be able to see Hamilton for, I mean, anytime soon, possibly ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is right now and has been like one of the hottest shows, and it's going to be that way for a long time. And if you live in an area of the world where you don't have easy access to theater and don't have easy access to like popular theater.
Mm-hmm.
You're screwed.
And that's why I'm saying there's almost too much money to be made in making it. Like they have to make it because everybody would pay for it. And look, let's look at it historically too.
I'd pay for it.
Let's look at the world's biggest shows, right?
Will there be sing-alongs?
Phantom of the Opera made into a movie. Cats.
Ah,
being made in
swear word right there.
What?
That Cats trailer is freaky.
I know. I agree. I have no use for that trailer.
I mean, I'm totally going to watch the movie when it's free.
Yeah.
But that trailer freaked me out.
Even then, I'm not in on that trailer. Chicago.
Oh, so good.
Not only made into a movie, it was a best picture.
But all these movies are from plays that were made wicked long ago.
That's why I'm saying if we give it 10 years or so,
Rent.
I think Rent
they did
made
it
into
Rent.
A movie. So that's what I'm saying. it's going to be made into a movie. It has to. There's too much money to be made in making it a movie. So that's that. My love, are you ready to close this bad boy out?
I am.
All right, let's do that.
You'll be back, soon you'll see. You remember you belong to me. You'll be back, time will tell. You remember that I served you well. Oceans rise, empires fall. We have seen each other through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love.
My favorite thing about having this song as our closing is watching Blake from across our studio dance with like his shoulders. My second favorite thing is I just love the releases that this actor does with his voice.
What do you mean? What's that?
Like his K's. You'll be back.
Oh, okay. Like, I see what you're saying.
And his gentle rollings of his R's.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. It's like butter rolling. Like, sorry, in case you can't tell, I've been a chorus director.
Well, actually, you don't want to know something fun about this actor?
What's our cat doing?
She's
going to break the studio. She's telling us time's up, guys.
The guy who was the king in this recording, his name's Jonathan Groff.
Yeah.
He is going his second season of the show Mindhunter, of which he is a star, has now premiered on Netflix.
Oh, congrats.
And it is a terrific show. So if you're into Jonathan Groff and the whole...
Who was Graff?
Jonathan Groff. And Jonathan Groff was actually the voice of what's-his-name in Frozen.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Yeah. Kristoff. Not Sven.
Definitely not Sven.
No, you don't get that joke right now, do you?
No.
This goes to show you how long it's been since you've watched Frozen, Blake.
What are you talking to me about?
Oh my gosh. When Olaf meets Anna and he's like, who's that? And she's like, that's Sven. And he points then to the reindeer, but she thought he was already pointing to the reindeer. He's like, and who's the reindeer? And she's like, Sven? And so he's like, oh, that makes it easy. So he calls Kristoff Sven. Come on, Sven.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then when that's he finally great. Goes and sees the trolls and they're like, Kristoff's home. Olaf's like, Kristoff? Where have you been, Blake?
Oh, man.
Gosh.
Oh, right. All right. I didn't know that.
Well, for now, ladies and gents, my name's Mary Larson.
And I'm not Sven.
We're going to have to watch Frozen tonight. Rise up.